welcome to Under the Olive Tree. You are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Today is February the 9th, 2006, and the hour is 11. My name is Laith Maarouf. I'm your host for the week, and I will be with you till noon as usual. Under the Olive Tree is more than just a radio show. We have two reasons for our existence. The first, to provide the space, the equipment, and the know-how of radio production to Palestinian youth in order for them to reach our second goal, to produce content that truly represents the Palestinian community. On our show today, we have an interview with Tawfiq Haddad, the co-founder of Between the Lines magazine, who was also featured in the film Peace, Propaganda and the Promised Land in August 2005. He worked on the Palestinian task force overseeing the unilateral Israeli evacuation from the Gaza Strip. This interview is to highlight the Israeli Apartheid Week 2006 that is being held in Montreal, in Toronto, in Hamilton and in Oxford, England, on the 30th anniversary of the International Convention on the Suppression and Punishment of the Crimes of Apartheid. Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights in Montreal presents the Israeli Apartheid Week 2006. This whole week of events starts on Monday, February the 13th, that's next Monday, at 7 p.m. at Concordia University, and goes on with many events. The first day is the event with Tawfiq Haddad, who we will listen to later on in the show, in a lecture titled The Intifada, The Unilateral Israeli Disengagement from Gaza, The Hamas Victory and Beyond, a political lecture and slideshow on the Israeli tactics of colonial control. On Tuesday, February the 14th, there's another event at 7 p.m. This one is at McGill University in Leacock Building, room 26. And it is titled Apartheid, Canada, South Africa and Israel, Making the Links. It features Continenta Horn, the elder from Kanawake of Mohawk Territory. She teaches at Concordia University and runs Mohawk Nation News. Dr. Rosina Mart, who is a South African professor that teaches at Guelph University. Linda Tabar, one of our collective members, and she's also a PhD candidate at the School of African and Oriental Studies in the University of London, and Hazem Jamjoum, a member of Al Auda Toronto. On Wednesday, February 15th, 2006, at 7 p.m. at Concordia University at Samuel Bronfman Building, there will be another event called Living in Exile, Memories of the Nakba, Ethnic Cleansing and the Right of Return. And it features Dr. Ismail Zayed, who is a longtime activist for the Palestinian Arab cause, born in the village of Beit Nuba, and who used to teach in the eastern provinces. We've had an interview with Dr. Ismail Zayed earlier this year. And also joining him will be Dr. Yuri Davis, an Israeli scholar who describes himself as an anti-Zionist Palestinian Jew. The day after, on Thursday, February the 16th, at 7 p.m. at McGill University, there'll be another event, and it's called Battling Apartheid, Nonviolent Resistance in Canada. At the event will be Sarita Ahuja. Sarita is a Montreal-based anti-imperialist activist who was in occupied Palestine during the Gaza disengagement and was also one of the International Solidarity Movement delegates there. Ron Saba, the editor of Montreal Planet, and also a representative of the Coalition for Justice and Peace in Palestine. Saturday, February the 18th, there will be a demonstration from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. in front of McGill College and St. Catherine Street, and it's called Montreal Against the Wall, a picket against the Israeli apartheid wall, and is held by the International Solidarity Movement and Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights. Israel Apartheid Week 2006 is the second annual week of action against apartheid in Israel and is part of a broad-based initiative. As I mentioned before, it's being held in Oxford University, in Toronto, in Montreal, and many universities, and also other campuses across Ontario. If you'd like more information on this, you can visit the SPHR website, www.sphr.org, and also you can visit the website that hosts all the different apartheid weeks happening across Canada and England. The website is endisraeliapartheid.net, endisraeliapartheid.net. But before we go to the interview, we're going to start with some beautiful music. Today's featured artist is Reem Kelani with her new album titled Springing Gazelles, Al-Ghuzlan and Nafira. It's a collection of Palestinian songs from the motherland and the diaspora. The song is amazing. As I said, it's called Yafa. It is a poem by Mahmoud Salim Al-Hoot, and the music is a composition by Reem Kelani. The poet Mahmoud Salim is a Jaffa-born poet, a mythologist, and translator. He was born in 1917 and passed in 1998. He represents the generation that lived through the Nakba, the catastrophe of the expulsion of the Palestinians from their homeland in 1948. He wrote this after losing all his manuscripts when fleeing Jaffa. As the lyrics suggest, it left him with painful memories. I will read the lyrics for our listeners that do not understand Arabic. Jaffa, my tears have dried up. I weep for you with stricken eyes. Will I ever see you? Will I live long enough? How are your sister towns? How are they? I long for them, as if each were a paradise. And those we left behind, those we left for dead, I am weary, but in my weariness, I only complain to God and to no one else. Jaffa, Jaffa.
قد شف دمعي فانتحبت دما متى أراك وهل في العمر من أمدي جف دمعي فانتحبت دما متى أراك وهل في العمر من أمد كيف الشقيقات كيف الشقيقات Thank you. كيف من قد تبقى في مرابعها، وكيف من قد تبقى في مرابعها، وقد تركناه فيها ترك ملتحد. تعبت 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 أشكو إلى الله، لا أشكو لا أشكو أشكو إلى أحد. يا فا
That was the beautiful voice of Reem Kilani singing for Yafa, by a poem by Mahmoud Salim Al-Hout. We will begin to listen to our interview for the week. It is an interview conducted by Vivian Tabar, our Montreal Collective member. It's an interview with Tawfiq Haddad, the co-founder of Between the Lines magazine, who is coming to speak in Montreal on Monday, February the 13th, 2006, 7 p.m. at Concordia University, Samuel Bronfman Building, 1590 Dr. Benfield Avenue, corner of Goodenage and Dr. Benfield. Hope to see you there.
Hello, Tawfiq. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Tawfiq, you will be giving a lecture here in Montreal next Monday, February the 13th, at Concordia University for SBHR's Israeli Apartheid Week. In fact, your talk will kick off the week-long event consisting of panels, talks, and exhibitions. The title of your talk is The Intifada, the Unilateral Israeli Disengagement from Gaza, the Hamas Victory, and Beyond, a political lecture and slideshow on Israel's tactics of colonial control. Can you give us a little preview as to what you will be covering in your talk?
Yeah, I guess I can. Well, the reason why I'm focusing on the disengagement from Gaza is because I actually think it's a very important, significant event which gives indications as to what's both at the heart of what has been going on in Palestine for the past 5 years, and indirectly, of course, the past 38 years of occupation of the West Bank and Gaza, and even more so, obviously, the broader question of what happened to the Palestinian people in 1948. But it also gives an indication for what's going on, what is likely to take place in the future, and it sort of sets the scene for that. And the reason I picked this event was largely because I was actually in Gaza at the time of the disengagement. I witnessed the sort of, as developments progressed, as Israel prepared for it, as the international media was, you know, given their line upon it, and then the actual implementation of it, then the actual handover, and then also what took place afterwards. And I think this event, together with the recent Hamas elections, which are in the news, but many people aren't necessarily clear about entirely what it means, can shed light upon the true dynamics of what is actually taking place in Palestine, which I'll go through in my lecture. I'm happy to go through parts of it now if you're interested. But I think that's sort of a rough overview, I would say.
As you just said, you were in Gaza during the Israeli unilateral disengagement, working as part of the Palestinian Monitoring Task Force overseeing the withdrawal. The mainstream media has portrayed this as a complete military withdrawal. However, there continues to be military control over borders, airspace, and continued military assaults and missile strikes against the Palestinian population in the Gaza Strip. Can you describe the actual realities on the ground from the disengagement to the present? And also, yesterday, Olmert, the acting prime minister, announced Israelis' plans for unilateral separation from the Palestinians within the West Bank. Can you also discuss how both these unilateral actions fit in with Israel's larger colonial projects?
Sure. I mean, we're talking about in the last 48 hours, there have been 9 Palestinians that have been killed with the use of unmanned drones or helicopters. It's actually not entirely clear how, but the fact remains that Gaza remains one of the most dangerous places in the world, largely because although the Israeli military may have physically withdrawn from the actual internal borders of the Gaza Strip, they have consolidated and strengthened their hold over the entire Gaza Strip. And obviously there's a 24-hour aerial siege that exists over Gaza. I mean, I think what's interesting here is to point out the fact that in times past, if a military army was unable to maintain control over certain population centers due to whatever reason, in this case, a combination of Palestinian resistance and internal Israeli considerations, if a military occupation army cannot maintain control or loses the desire or interest to be able to control this area, technically in years past that would mean the liberation of these areas for the people below. But that's no longer the case in sort of the era of a technologically integrated, what they would call a defense system that's integrated from satellites to monitoring posts to trenches to drones to all different ways within which Israel is able to essentially control what goes on both in Gaza and as well as for the West Bank. And sort of to answer your question more succinctly, this Gaza model is actually what is now technically being implemented in the West Bank, where you see very clearly the creation of 3 different zones similar to Gaza, larger than Gaza, but similar to Gaza, the same conception, essentially Bantustan regions, which are encapsulated behind walls and monitored constantly by settlements, etc., and separated from one another, and with which the Israelis can control everything that enters and exits these areas. And so this is the policy that's been taking place since the disengagement took place. It's the final regime, the final, what Olmert said, was very telling. He actually represents the continuity of Sharon's policy, which represents the continuity of U.S.-American policy in the region, which is to fragment the Palestinian people and to encapsulate them in these areas, these separated cantons, and whenever they resist, or those who continue to resist, will be targeted and eliminated. And they're very clear about this. And that's what's going on now, and that's what will be going on in the future. And at the same time, of course, you have the continuation of the same discourse of the fact that, you know, the Palestinians are, you know, reject the peace process, reject Israel's existence. Today we have Tzipi Lipni, who is the Israeli delegate to Washington right now. She just met with Rice, and she declared that the Palestinian Authority now is a terrorist entity, and therefore legitimating in advance both the non-communication of international borders with the Palestinians, as well as legitimating in advance potential future massacres or similar incidents, which I think your listeners will have to be very aware of as a possibility in the near future.
You were working on a book entitled Back to 48. Can you tell us about the book and specifically what exactly is this notion of Back to 48?
Well, the conception of Back to 48 actually is a quotation that comes from one of the Israeli generals who was the chief of staff for the majority of the Intifada. His name is Moshe Ya'alon. And essentially, he more than anyone else can be credited, I don't know if it's a credit, but with the one who sort of formulated the tactical and strategic framework within which the Israeli army repressed or attempted to repress and extinguish the Palestinian Intifada. His argument went as follows. He says, after Camp David, after the failure of the quote-unquote peace process, because I think it's very important for your readers, listeners, to understand that obviously it wasn't a peace process, so that's in quotation marks. But but that aside, the point being, he said, with the failure of this model, a model which was premised upon the Palestinians policing themselves and becoming this a subcontracted security partner for Israel and indirectly for U.S. interests in the region. With the failure of this model at Camp David and with the collapse of the quote-unquote peace process, you have the return to 1948, that meaning the conception of trying to find a quote-unquote Palestinian partner to repress Palestinians for the purposes and interests of Israel and America has failed. The purpose, the attempt to find an apartheid chief or chieftain to sign on has failed. Therefore, we must abandon this approach. Very clearly, they did that by delegitimizing Arafat and attacking directly the PA. And we must return. Unilateralism, or return. This is, we are essentially back to 48. We must go back to our old methods. That meaning fragmentation, weakening the Palestinian people, and ultimately working to make Palestinian life non-viable where they live, both in the West Bank and Gaza Strip, and furthermore, even the Palestinians inside Israel, because Israel in this day and age has been consumed with the question of the demographic balance, as they call it, between the number of Jews in historical Palestine and the number of Palestinians. And it is trying to ensure that it can consolidate what they call the Jewish democratic state. And so the conception of going back to 48 is that it was very clear in an interview that Moshe Ya'alon gave to Haaretz, one of the top journalists there, a fellow by the name of Ari Shavit. He said, we are back to 48. We are back to the period when Israel is a foreign entity in this region, and we must burn into consciousness, into the consciousness of the Palestinians, their own defeat, and that we will not be moved, and that the Palestinian Intifada represents a form of cancer, and that false assessment of this could be lethal on our behalf, and what we are doing right now is a form of chemotherapy, and if needed in the future, we may be forced, in his words, to use amputation, which is a clear reference to, this is the top military man in Israel, a clear reference to the potential for forms of ethnic cleansing taking place. I would already argue that forms of ethnic cleansing are already taking place in Palestine. What you have with the construction of the wall system, you're essentially suffocating Palestinian life. You make family life, social life, economic life, educational life, health life, virtually impossible. Within 20 years, you will have no Palestinians working on the land. You will have families either separated from one another permanently or young people leaving Palestine to try and work in other areas. And it is a slow form of ethnic cleansing that is taking place. This is what we get if nothing changes. There is far more dangerous potential repercussions about what could happen in a regional setting where a regional conflagration could arise linked perhaps to what the Americans are doing in Iraq today and what the Americans and the Israelis are thinking about doing vis-a-vis Iran and potentially Syria and Lebanon.
That was Vivian Tabar interviewing Tawfiq Haddad. We will return to the rest of the interview after this intermission of music. Again, we will listen to a second song by Reem Kilani. The second song we're listening to is titled in her album as Mawwal, Variations on Loss. It's a poem by Mahmoud Darwish. Reem Kilani wrote the music to this poem in 1992 for a BBC Everyman documentary called See No Evil on the 10th anniversary of the massacre in the refugee camps of Sabra and Shatila in Beirut. The Palestinian poet Mahmoud Darwish, born in 1942 in the now depopulated village of Birwe near Aqar, wrote the original poem in 1967 to convey the Palestinian sense of loss at the time. Darwish is now internationally recognized as one of the greatest living Arab poets. In this poem, Darwish borrows the chorus line from Palestinian folklore, thus juxtaposing colloquial Palestinian with classical Arabic for the main verses. I will read just the chorus of this song and maybe you will get the gist of it. O mother, I can endure the dagger's stabbing, but not the rule of a coward. And I leave it to you to guess who we're speaking about when we're talking about the rule of a coward.
ضرب الخناجر على حكم النادل في خسرت لسعى الزناب وكان ليلي طويلا على سياج الحداد وما خسرت نهر الأغاني يا أمة مهري وسيل I'm not afraid to die. قبلة أو دعاء والباب يوصد دوني قالوا تحب الجميلة فقلت حبي عبادة الشعر أحلى خميلة والصدر أغلى وسادة والعرس درب بطولة يما مويل الهوى يما مويلية ضرب الخيل وخلف جفنيك طفلي يقول يومي أجمل وأنت شمسي وظلي عن الورود أدافع شوقا إلى شفتيك وعن تراب الشوارع خوفا على قدميك وعن دفاعي ودافع وعن دفاعي ودافع يما طويل الهوى يما طويل يا طلب الخير
Reem Kilani again gracing us with her beautiful voice. We will return to the interview with Tawfiq Haddad, a co-founder of Between the Lines magazine.
You have written a few articles about the Hamas victory. Can you talk about the implications and significance of the Hamas victory for the Palestinian National Movement? And also, can you discuss the victory in relation to in the face of colonial control that you have outlined throughout this discussion?
Hmm. Well, the Hamas victory is incredibly significant. It's the first time that you have another set of actors coming onto the Palestinian political national stage and taking the reins from Fatah, which has dominated both the political trajectory as well as the financial resources of the Palestinian National Movement for the past 40 years, doing so in a rather undemocratic fashion, both vis-a-vis other Palestinian factions as well as inside Fatah itself. For these reasons, together combined with the fact that their political strategy, which they adopted beginning in the early 70s, but which became manifested in the Oslo Accords from 1993 through the peace process, and thereafter failed categorically in its ability to achieve Palestinian national rights. So what you see, due to the accumulation of different reasons, both the democratic question inside Fatah, the political question, its political failures, its failures to achieve national rights, in fact, more than that, its retreat on many different agendas of the Palestinian National Movement, retreats on the question of the unity of the Palestinian people, threatened retreats upon questions of the Palestinian right to return to their homes and towns and lands inside what is today Israel. So these reasons, together with the fact that Hamas played a very clever and sophisticated role over the past 18 years of its existence, and particularly over the past 5 years, essentially what Hamas did is they built a disciplined, organized political party that had both, that was based on a strong political footing that was clear and uncategorical about defending Palestinian rights. In addition, they developed, on top of the political platform they had, they developed a well-established network of social welfare services, which became highly needed in the context of the difficulties Palestinians have been going through for the past 5 years. And on top of that, you also had them articulating a clear resistance tone and strategy for the national movement, differing distinctively from the tone of acquiescence and submission which had characterized the Fatah-led PA approach. And this, for these reasons, in addition to the fact that Fatah was not able to compose unified lists, therefore resulting in the division of its voting power, resulted in the ascendance of Hamas, essentially. But in the this is highly significant, because it gives the opportunity for a new Palestinian national movement to emerge. This is exactly what Hamas will attempt to construct with the help of all national forces on the Palestinian scene. The question is what the Americans and the Israelis will do to try and prevent this from emerging. And that is what that sort of paints a picture of what's going on in the Palestinian scene. Previously, I answered what is going on with the Israeli conceptions of things, and I think those pose the major questions for what the near and distant future has coming up on the horizon.
Since the Hamas victory, we've heard a lot from European and North American governments about threatening financial aid to the Palestinians. What impact do you think this victory will have on international solidarity support for the Palestinian struggle? How do you see the responses from leftist circles in the West?
From leftist circles in the West? Well, there's two parts to your questions. The first part regarding Western aid to the Palestinians. It's clear with the indication that this aid may now be put on hold or frozen or perhaps not even given over, that this aid was not a form of aid at all, but was the extension of the foreign policies of these governments, and essentially was a conditional form of providing money to an entity called the Palestinian Authority, which in their conception of it was supposed to fulfill this subcontracting security role. in addition to being the quote-unquote Palestinian partner that is needed for the sort of false puppet theater that we see on the media between the Israelis on one side and the Palestinians on the other, and their perennial problems to negotiate between each other. This was the role of the Palestinian Authority, to play this role of being this, the Palestinian face, the Palestinian partner, in the minds of those who are observing this outside, in addition to, hopefully, a role that it could play to suppress Palestinian resistance to the occupation. So that was how it was conceived of. Now, with the halting of this, it's actually not going to change too much the question of what goes... Well, it's not that it won't change. It's a complicated question, largely because you have the Palestinian Authority being one of the largest employers, in fact, the largest employer in the Palestinian territories. It has about 135,000 public sector jobs that it provides, comprising, I believe, around a third of the economy. Not a third of the economy, but the third of Palestinians in the area, shall I say. So it remains to be seen what their positions will be towards this. I find it difficult to believe that they will try, that the Americans and the Europeans will try. I mean, it's clear where things are going. They're likely to try and suffocate Hamas and its attempt to reform the Palestinian national movement. They do not want a reformed Palestinian movement that is... Hamas, by the way, came on a platform that was very clear. They called themselves the Reform and Change Slate. That was not by accident. They understood very well how deeply the sentiment was in the Palestinian streets that under the Fatah-led PA, things had been very problematic. And in fact, we have one of the reports coming out of the Palestinian Authority talking about, from Palestinian Authority reports, talking about $700 million being either wasted or disappearing or throughout the course of the peace process. But I want to mention that this aid, this money that was spent, that went away due to corruption, was supported by the Israelis and the Americans. They wanted a corrupt entity there that over time would become more interested in its class interests and abandon the political interests. And so with Hamas's ascendance, you see the reinjection of the political resistance discourse there, and you see the Palestinian street voting against the old upper old Palestinian economic elite classes, which had infected the political national discourse. So just try and tie it all together. I'm trying to think. What was the last part of your question now?
The last part was how this would actually affect the international solidarity movement.
The left, yes. Well, unfortunately, large sections of the left, and I'm sure this is the case in Canada, do not have a sense of clarity around what is going on in the Palestinian national movement overall, and certainly don't have a articulated understanding of what Hamas is as a movement, the reasons for its success, and what it means as a political actor. This framed within the framework of a post-September 11th world where there's simply so much ignorance and racism against Arabs and Muslims in the West. And this is directly an extension of Western, largely American and European interests. I mean, it's essential part of colonization where you have to dehumanize the victims of your policies in the region. So, unfortunately, international solidarity forces are not yet clear enough on these issues, either theoretically or factually, and the danger exists that they could easily embrace a framework which upholds, essentially, the imbalance of power and the imperial interests that are at stake here. So I think it's very important for international solidarity activists to uphold very basic principles that being the basic principle of the Palestinian right to self-determination, the right for Palestinians to have their independent political representation determined democratically by themselves without the interference of others and without any form of condition upon them for the nature or character of what that movement is. The question of civil liberties inside Palestine is a Palestinian national question to deal with amongst Palestinians. It is not the focus or not the role of international solidarity forces to interfere in the nature of what Palestinian politics are looking like. It is the role of international solidarity forces to keep their eyes focused upon the broader picture, the broader framework of the fact that you have a racist, colonialist state called Israel, which was set up to as the exclusive Jewish democratic state, as an exclusivist Jewish democratic state. We're talking about a country that where 97% of the land cannot be sold to non-Jews. The 3% that Palestinians are on, and they're barely holding on to their land there. This is for citizens of the state of Israel. I'm not even talking about the ones that they have under occupation in the West Bank, in Gaza. International solidarity forces need to maintain focus about the broader context that Israel is a racist colonialist state, that it is doing the dirty work of U.S. imperialism in the region to subvert any anti-American or anti-Israeli sentiments that that throughout the region. And Israel has been consistent in doing that. I hope to try and talk about that in my talk. It is the goal of international solidarity forces to read up and understand that history and understand how that history is taking place today, not to put any forms of conditions upon what the Palestinians look like, what their resistance looks like, what their social movements look like. That is an internal Palestinian question. And it is the role of Palestinian progressive forces to be a part of that discussion amongst the Palestinian national movement forces. We ask from our solidarity brothers and sisters around the world to have this sense of clarity and this sense of political framework when they work to look to do their solidarity work, and to principally at this day and age cut against this rote racism that is taking place against Arabs and Muslims, to support the right to self-determination of Palestinians, and particularly their right to resist an illegal and racist occupation and the policies of the racist Zionist government.
Thank you, Tawfiq. I want to thank you for being here. I really enjoyed the interview, and I also am really looking forward to seeing your talk on Monday, February 13th at Concordia. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.
That was the rest of Vivian Tabar's interview with Tawfiq Haddad, the co-founder of Between the Lines magazine. We will break for one more song before we come back for our goodbyes. The last song that we're going to play is called Qasida of Return, or the Poem of Return. Qasida is an Arabic word that means poem. And it is a poem by Salma al-Khadra al-Jayusi. And Salma is a Palestinian poet and historian. She hails from Safad. She spent her early years in Aqar and Jerusalem before living in the diaspora in various Arab countries, Europe and the United States. Jayusi does not shy away from the collective self-criticism, and in this poem, she addresses the renegades within the Palestinian Arab self, namely those whom she sees as responsible for the destruction of so much in the Arab world. Again, I will read some of the verses in this poem. So go away, you killer of our longing. Yesterday was our wedding and our funeral. Don't you realize that we'd embraced you in our longing, and that our longing for you is now dead? Our longing is dead, though our promise is yet to come. To the return, Qasidat al-Awda. We listen to Reem.
تغرب عن رؤياك دنيانا القاسية إن فيها سرنا المدفون أحلام صبايانا الفاتية إن فيها قبر أمي وأبي قبر الهوى والبسمات ولها في قلبنا ملفوح من حب ترانيم شجية نحن صغنا لها بالصلوات نحن نهوى رملها محمود والريح العاتي وبلاياها كلما دل على أهدافنا كبر الحياة فابتعد يا قاتل الأشواق عنا أمسكان العرس والمأذان هل تدرك أن قد روزنا
Kelani breaking our heart with her beautiful voice on Palestine. This brings us to the end of our show. I'd like to remind you all to go to the events of the Israeli Apartheid Week held in Montreal, Toronto, Southern Ontario, and Oxford, England. You can get the details of the events happening on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday on the Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights website, www.sphr.org. And you can also visit the website www.endisraeliapartheid.net for details on the different venues across Canada and England. Also, I want to make one more announcement. It's about Dabka trainings that are being held by SPHR. Again, for Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights, they hold a Dabka theater every year as a fundraiser for the activities in Canada. Dabka is the Palestinian traditional folk dance. It is a line dance, like other line dances in the Levant and Eastern Europe. The trainings are held every Sunday until April the 2nd in room H5. 460 in Concordia University. That's the address is 1455 de Maisonneuve at Concordia University, starting at noon. Again, it's every Sunday until April the 2nd, starting at noon in room H460 in Concordia University's hall building. For the DEPK and the events of the Apartheid Week, again, visit the SPHR website at www.sphr.org. Again, thank you for being with us this week. I'm Laith Maarouf, your host. Until we meet under the olive tree, I bid you a free, free Palestine.